Hello everyone. So I decided to do something new that I've never done in my podcasting career so far. I decided that I'm going to mostly talk off the top of my head, and some of my dictionary words will be from the heart, and then I have my Webster's dictionary in my hand, where if you hear me pause, that's me looking for the correct verbiage to say, so I'll never run out of words to say. So I decided that's going to be my new style of podcasting from now on. I'm going to have my Webster's New World Dictionary and Thesaurus Second Edition in my hand. But for the most part, I'm talking from my heart. But if I need to have my vernacular enlarged, that was from the heart, then you'll hear a slight pause and possibly turning of the pages. I don't know if you can hear it or not. So here we go. The topic for today is my public figure life. And this is the last time I talk about it. I've done some episodes about it before. So if you hear me talk without pausing, that's from the heart. If you hear some pausing in between, that's my dictionary and me flipping and using it. Here we go. So I want to talk about my public figure life. And the reason why I want to talk about it is that I know that's going to come very soon where I'll be a global icon. When I breathe like that, that's just me thinking in deep thought. I'm not using my dictionary right now. But when I think about how that part of my life will be, I've learned that I have to be a person who Google searches people. Because it's one thing to befriend. It's one thing to see somebody as family, you know, chosen family. But I decided that I need to internet research people that come into my life, because some people hide their criminal records. Some people hide their mugshots. Some people hide tales of woe from the past that they have deliberately caused to other people that is abusive. So I've been educating myself so much on human character traits. And I said to myself that I will definitely never ignore, from this point forward, red flags. And you can feel the red flags when you have that knot, not just in your heart, but in your stomach. Because in the past, I would feel, but I didn't know how to fully feel. I would think, I didn't know how to fully think. I would do, I wouldn't know how to fully do. I would speak, I didn't know how to fully speak. I didn't know how to respond wisely and therapeutically to red flags, red herrings, cautionary tales, lies, folly, and how to detect moral failures, I should say. You know, to be quite crass, healthily speaking, I didn't know how to go about a healthy bullshit detector. Bullshit is never healthy. I'm talking about, I didn't know how to have a bullshit detector. I didn't know how to have a lie detector. I'm talking about how to fully trust my instincts, my intuition. I didn't know. How does it relate to my public figure life? Well, I understand that what I'm called to do, most people are not. My calling is very rare. And you're probably wondering, but Antonio, do you think that you overshare? No, I don't, because I am called to be a human rights, equal rights, civil and political rights, economic, social and cultural rights person. So within those types of human rights, there are countless controversial issues that I have to compassionately and wholesomely address publicly, which requires me to do personal life sharing that is nutritious and nurturing. So we live in a society where people share their personal business, and it tends to be traumatic because they're unhealed. There's no wisdom, no growth, no restoration to what they're saying. They're basically shock jocks who pretend to be truth tellers. They have a falsified version of tell it like a T.I. is. And I want to say that my personal life sharing is not that. I talk about my childhood, what happened to me sexually that was traumatic, and how I went from feeling like, okay, maybe there's a lane for me in mainstream porn where the type of porn I do is not the type of porn that will upset feminists and human rights minded people. I wanted to do the type of porn in mainstream porn where I'm like, hey, I want to help y'all to create the kind of porn, erotica centered, where people who have been made to feel like they are sexually no damn good, erotically no damn good, sensually no damn good, romantically no damn good, to say that there is a healthy sex life after rape. There is a healthy sensual life after intimate partner violence. There is a healthy erotic life after enduring unregistered and registered sex offenders. And there is a healthy romance after domestic abuse. And there is a healthy interpersonal life after enduring verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and psychological abuse for years. And I wanted mainstream porn to give me that avenue, or should I say I could create that avenue, to not get rid of sex. Not to get rid of film sex, but say, hey, y'all need to do film sex in a way that makes people like me feel that, hey, despite what happened when you was a child, and despite what happened to us as adults, some of us, that I can have healthy sexual dynamics, healthy erotic dynamics, healthy sensual dynamics, healthy romantic dynamics, healthy interpersonal dynamics. I can have a healthy relationship with sex, sensuality, eroticism, romance, and interpersonal, even though I endured sexual abuse, erotic abuse, sensual abuse, romantic abuse, and interpersonal abuse. So I know I'm saying the same thing in many different ways, but that's how you know I am wholesomely passionate about what I'm talking about. So this all relates to how many people would look at some of the things I said about my public life and just my episodes and my personal life. And honestly, I know in my heart I'm not oversharing, because what I'm teaching people is you can talk about sex publicly, appropriately, compassionately, wholesomely. And each time you talk about sex, their people should have their wisdom stimulated, their personal and professional growth stimulated, their kindness stimulated, their self-control, self-discipline stimulated. So you can talk about it publicly as long as the inner lives, L-I-V-E-E-S, of the human beings that are talking to you, they start experiencing character building in the right directions. And they experience the character building even within sex. So, yes, people that are not used to me talking about sex healthily publicly will assume that, oh God, you're just another shock jock. I'm not. And many people go, you're just using autism as an out. No, I'm not. I'm showing people that things can be talked about publicly that are very taboo, very behind closed doors, because most people have taboo thoughts. I'm not talking about illegalities. I'm talking about most people think about sex. They may not talk about it publicly, some. They may not talk about it with certain people, but it's in most people's minds. I'm like, well, since it's in our heads, let's talk about it from a standpoint of nobility, substance, character, integrity, and moral effectiveness and moral excellence. I'm not even assigning religion to the conversation because I understand that everybody is of a religion, and I want everybody, whether they are of faith or not, to be able to relate to me when it comes to at least one statement I make on a podcast. Another thing is, yes, I do not claim to live a perfect life. Never have, never will be. In fact, my past episodes, I go above and beyond to let people know there's nothing perfect in my life. I don't live the perfect life at all. What I do want to make clear is I no longer feel like I have an avenue in mainstream porn to be sexually therapeutic, to be sensually therapeutic, to be erotically therapeutic, to be romantically therapeutic, and to personally therapeutic to people, because they don't allow sexually therapeutic adult films. Sensually therapeutic adult films, erotically therapeutic adult films, romantically therapeutic adult films, and interpersonally therapeutic adult films, they don't. And that's what I wanted to do. When I say therapeutic, I'm talking about that you begin to experience a sense of, okay, I no longer have to live a life of sexual calamities, erotic catastrophes, sensual chaos, romantic using my dictionary right now. Romantic casting away. And interpersonal conceding. Right? So I decided as for ethical porn, I thought there was an avenue for me in that world to showcase therapeutic adult films, sensually, sexually, erotically, romantically, interpersonally. And I come to find out in that kind of world, they don't think about neurodiverse sexuality and how to be therapeutic about that. Neurodiverse sensuality, how to be therapeutic about that. Neurodiverse eroticism, how to be therapeutic about that. Neurodiverse romance, how to be therapeutic about that. And neurodiverse interpersonal, how to be therapeutic about that. They don't think about those things. And I recognize that I had excellent intentions. I was not trying to promote womanizing because that's not the kind of heart I have. Some people go, but some episodes you talk about how, you know, you have that spirit of wanting to be with a lot of women, a lot of men. Sometimes, yes, my biology, my flesh feels that way. But I never encourage anyone to make it easy for themselves to have infections and diseases. I don't encourage anybody to have the kind of sex life that the late President John F. Kennedy did. I don't encourage people to be like President John F. Kennedy, the late John F. Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy. I will never encourage that kind of sex life. I will never encourage anyone to have the kind of sex life that I witnessed as a child in organized crime. I go out in a way to discourage people from having this kind of sex life. I'm not telling people to have a lot of partners. I'm not telling people to have a small amount of partners. I'm not telling people a medium amount of partners. What I'm saying is this. Don't have the kind of sex life where sexual disasters are common for you, for your partners, for your partner if you're monogamous, and sexually disastrous directly and indirectly, because sexual disasters affect communities quite negatively, dramatically. So I encourage people to be wholesome with sex. If you're going to be non-monogamous, be wholesome with sex. If you're going to be monogamous, be wholesome with sex. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying live your life in sexual moderation, sensual moderation, romantic moderation, erotic moderation, and interpersonal moderation. I don't tell people to discard birth control. I go out of my way to say the total opposite. I glamorize birth control healthily because I understand that people are human. And I'm not using human as an excuse for self-destructive behavior. I never have done that. I never will. What I'm saying is that I do acknowledge that not everybody can wait until marriage to have sex. Not everybody can do that. Human history has proven that. I say, okay, if you're gonna have your sex, be lawful, be reasonable, no abuse, no trauma, no victimization, no violence, no human rights abuses, no human rights violations. Age of consent has to be honored everywhere, all the time. And you have to actually care about each other. I don't care if it's group sex, two people sex. Everybody has to care about everybody involved. Plain and simple. There's no loopholing that. And I tell people that make sure the sex that you're having, there's no insecurity motivating it, no sense of inadequacy motivating it, no deception motivating it. It has to be completely truthful. I'm not saying brag to everybody about your business. No, yes, privacy, confidentiality, they both have to be healthy. I'm not saying keep trauma secrets. What I'm saying is that y'all have to, when it comes to sex, live your life above reproach. That's what I tell people. And you can do that secularly. You can do that if you're a member of the faith-based community. If you're interfaith, you can still do that. When it comes to sex, live your life above reproach. And how does this relate to my public figure life? Well, because people need to know, why is my podcast, our podcast, the way that it is, right? So another thing, people go, Antonio, why do you curse sometimes in your podcast? I'm glad you asked that question. Sometimes profanity best states the truth. I don't cuss just to cuss. When I cuss, it's wisdom motivates it. And many people go, but yeah, what if church people, the way I cuss it actually resonates with church people. I'm not telling everybody to go cuss. I'm not telling everybody not to cuss. You know, there's appropriate language. Sometimes profanity is appropriate. The reason why I'm public with it, because one, TVMA, the equivalent of TVMA for a podcast is the letter E, explicit, because I'm wholesomely explicit. I'm inappropriately appropriate. That's my colorful way of saying it. And no, I'm not a lawbreaker. What I'm saying is that sometimes saying non-cuss words doesn't best get the healthy points across. Because sometimes cussing actually wakes certain people up. Sometimes cussing is the best way to reach certain people. Now, with my podcast, because I have the letter E when it comes to my episodes, when it comes to E next to Tonio Time Daily, it's the adult's job to keep minors from listening to my podcast. If your minor is listening to it, it's not my fault, because the letter E tells you, okay, I can listen to it, my kid can't. That's not a double standard. That's just maturity in motion. So, other things about my podcast. Some people will go, but Antonio, your episode's on religion. Why did you do that? Well, and some people would feel like, but it's so confusing. You talk about your Christian kid self, your secular adult self. I'm going to clear up your confusion easily right now. When you have been through trauma, when you come from a people that were supposed to be family, but they never were family, when you come from a home of abuse culture that's not home at all, then there are going to be gray areas and complexities when it comes to religion and how you view it. When it comes to how my child self and adult self relate to each other, you know, we're the same person. So I acknowledge that gray areas and complexities are in everybody's life. Some people have more gray areas and complexities than others. Some have less gray areas and complexities than others. I have slave narrative type of gray areas and complexities in my life. Yes, my ancestors had it much worse than me because the law prohibited their humanity. I don't have that as much as they did. Theirs was to the point where they couldn't read or write. Even though there are some laws against people with disabilities, we don't go to jail if we're caught reading a book or if we're caught trying to write a book. Like, I have a book on Amazon. So I have not been incarcerated for that, but if my ancestors tried to emulate what Frederick Douglass did, who wrote 3 autobiographies, that was considered a crime to be black and literate, to be a black published author. So yes, my ancestors will always have it much worse than me, but my childhood, my life is similar in terms of slave narrative type gray areas, slave narrative type complexity. So that's why my views on religion is the way that it is. And many people will go, but your grandma raised you in faith, right? So how do you reconcile what happened to you as a child and how it affects your views on religion compared to she was the first person to introduce religion to you? Well, here's the thing. I had the kind of grandma, and if she were around today physically, she would not feel disappointed in me. Because if I could explain to her, look, when you were not around, all this happened. If you were around, none of this would have happened. If I put it to her that way, each time I talk about what happened to me between the age of 5 all the way to now, my grandma would not be upset with me. She'd be upset with many people related to me biologically. She would have a tough time not being a serial killer when it comes to those who traumatized me as a child. So I had an understanding grandma. I was very fortunate and blessed, and I use that word not religiously, when it comes to her. Now, many people would go, so Antonio, the affairs and the sexual recklessness of your adolescence and mostly your early young adult years being in college, do you think that you disrespected the privacy and confidentiality of those you used to sleep with? No. Because I did not have the kind of rapport with them where I couldn't go public about what we did. We had to, because they knew that I was going to be a public figure. So they said, look, I know you're going to talk about this when you blow up and become famous. You can talk about what we did from a standpoint of how to transform dysfunctional living to functional living. Because even we knew that we were struggling with sexual dysfunction, erotic dysfunction, sensual dysfunction, romantic dysfunction. They said, okay, you can talk about the dysfunction that we did and how we can live erotic functionality, sexual functionality, romantic functionality, and sensual functionality, and how to go from interpersonal dysfunctionality to interpersonal functionality. So we had that kind of rapport where I could say it publicly and they wouldn't be angry with me. If they told me, I'd rather you not talk about it, then I would not have talked about it. I could address the subject without talking about me personally what happened. I had the kind of partners where they were like, I want you to talk about what we did because I don't want people to end up like us. We said that to each other in the midst of the using my dictionary again. In the midst of the malevolence that happened to us before we met each other, they wanted me to also tell y'all that sexual benevolence overcomes sexual malevolence. Erotic benevolence overcomes erotic malevolence. Sensual benevolence overcomes sensual malevolence, and romantic benevolence overcomes romantic malevolence, and interpersonal benevolence overcomes interpersonal malevolence, right? So that's what I wanted to tell me and then wanted to tell people. So they're not mad at me at all. We had that kind of agreement where, you know, I'm gonna be a public figure. And I asked them, what do you want me to do with what we're doing transformationally? Do you want to keep it between us? And they're like, no. I want people to be blessed by learning healthy sexual life lessons, healthy erotic life lessons, healthy sensual life lessons, healthy romantic life lessons, healthy interpersonal life lessons from our struggles as rape survivors, abuse survivors too. Because every person I slept with in the past was victimized by rape, and physical abuse and verbal abuse and psychological abuse and emotional abuse. Every person I slept with was a compound trauma survivor, compound abuse survivor, compound victimization survivor. They were all abused sexually, emotionally, psychologically, verbally, spiritually, and so on and so forth. That's what happened with us, against our will and voluntarily speaking. And then I also want to mention that when it came to the abuse, organized crime, many people actually be fearful for your life, because what if some people remember you and try to get at you? Here's the thing. I was fortunate to emerge from that world never having to fear for my life, in the sense where it was understood. Before I was officially out that world, there was a street edict, as I call it, where it was understood, if you come after Antonio, you will, and we find out about it, you will be killed that night. Everybody in the streets knew that. That's why nobody tried to get at me. Because the last handful of times I bumped into people from that world, they told me that's a permanent street rule. So anybody trying to do anything to me, there are still some people from that world that will go, I will slaughter you. I'm not encouraging crime boss living. I'm not encouraging street crew living. I'm not encouraging gang banging. In fact, I strongly discourage people being crime bosses. I strongly discourage people being a part of street gangs and gang banging. I strongly discourage crime crew, street crew living. What I'm saying is that I'm not saying it's fortunate in a good way. What I'm saying is that that's what was told to me. That's why I didn't bump into too many people from that world, because they're afraid to be seen with me, because they're afraid to be killed. Now, also, I have a lot of protection. I have a lot of... more people love me than the ones that don't, so that's a beautiful outnumbering. And because there's a lot of podcast listeners, most of y'all love me, so most people wouldn't let anything happen to me. Most of you listeners wouldn't. Most people in the legal system wouldn't let it happen. Most people in the entire world would go, I wish you would try to come after Antonio, right? Because I'm a loving person. I'm a decent person. I'm a law-abiding person. I'm a non-violent person. So I'm the type of person that people would go, I love this person so much that I wish a motherfucker would. That's how most people feel about me. So I'm not a street guy. I don't claim street clout. I was forced to have it back then, but I'm not a street clout type of person. I'm not a hoodlum. I'm not a ruffian. So I'm not afraid to go public about what happened as a child. Many people go, but the Italian mafia is very vengeful, and the Mexican cartels are just very much into payback. I'm like, look, they've already been exposed. So many documentaries have aired their dirty laundry out. I'm just next in line. I'm the best in line, actually, because even many people in that world will go, look, yes, we commit crimes, but you're going to include a fucking child in all this shit? That's how they talk. I'm not saying be a part of that world. I'm saying the total opposite. What I'm also saying is even they don't like children being a part of their dirt. That's why I didn't last long in the crime world. 6 to 12 months, that's considered immeasurably short in the crime world. That's not lengthy enough to be a street legend, which I think it's a bullshit concept, and the language is bullshit too. But when I think about what happened is that in that kind of world, I'm not afraid to be labeled a snitch or a rat, because I'm telling people, if you stay away from criminality, motherfuckers won't be snitching on you. Motherfuckers wouldn't be ratting your ass out. And motherfuckers wouldn't be pissing you off, because you wouldn't renege on promises, because you would have nothing to do with that world. It's a hell of a damn world to be in. And so I tell people, if you don't do dirt, you don't have to worry about anybody reporting you, betraying you, and deceiving you. So if you don't do dirt, you won't have snitching and ratting going on. And I also tell people, it's okay to report crimes for morally excellent reasons. I tell people, that kind of life, no one should be living it. You can get money without committing crimes. That's what I tell people. I also tell people, you can stand up for yourself without doormatting other people. I also tell people that you can even be of significance without being fearsome to everybody that crosses your path. So, yes, I do talk about what happened to me growing up, but I never glorify any of the mayhem and madness of my upbringing. I go above and beyond measure and compare to tell people, don't live the kind of past that I was forced to endure in my boyhood. And I also tell people that I'm not just all talk. I want to do more. I'm planning on doing more. I want to actually directly help survivors out. And that's what I'm planning on. I'm in the planning stages of how best to go about it, because I'm not a lip service type of individual. I'm not a squeaky clean person. And at the same time, I'm the type of person that really does have a heart for underdogs like myself. I don't care how well off I am, I'm an underdog at heart, and that self-identification will never change. I don't go Hollywood on people just because I'm a big name. I'm still Antonio from the block. I'm not talking about 5 years old. I'm talking about how the Jenny from the Block song, I don't even have any rocks. Jennifer Lopez has rocks. I'm not talking about crack cocaine. I'm talking about jewelry. And no, she didn't get the jewelry from criminality. She got it from her legal celebrity life. What I'm saying is that I'm a simple living minimalist guy. You will never see me wearing designer clothes. You will never see me sporting any jewelry. You will never see me driving luxurious vehicles and riding luxurious vehicles. You will never see me living in a palace, living in a mansion, living in a yacht, living in a castle, living in a McMansion, living in a mini mansion. I don't like any of these things. Now, every now and then I would have to bite the bullet and ride around the limo, because sometimes when people are hospitable to you and they live that way, and it could be me being received at the White House, I might have to ride around a limo, even though I would not want to do that. But sometimes I would have to do that every now and then, what I would normally do, but it's not deceptive in any kind of way about who I am. If anything, about who and what I am as a person, I am the kind of person where I would want to still be as low-key as possible. And it's hard to do as a global icon because people want to hog up all your time. You will never see me at every A-list event, A-list party, because I'm going to spend most of my time in shelters, domestic violence shelters, rape crisis centers, environments where abuse survivors need my therapeutic presence, my therapeutic word choices, my therapeutic tone of voice, my therapeutic companionship. They would need that from me. I want to spend more time with the least of these than the most of these. I do not want to be too accessible or not accessible enough in terms of being a public figure. I want to be a Jesus type public figure. No, I'm not the Messiah. No, I'm not God. No, I'm not the Holy Spirit. No, I'm not the Savior. I'm not the Christ. I'm not the Son of God. What I am saying is that I like how he lived his life, in terms of he was out and about with the people. He was wise about it. Yes, I'll have protection, but most of my protection will come from the public. The public will protect me better than my security team ever will. Because when you touch people's hearts, they're going to be on the lookout for, okay, wait a minute, so-and-so talking to Tony O'Crazy, I'm going to put an end to this bullshit right now. Who the fuck are you to come at my goddamn Antonio like that? Or what, somebody rolled their teeth, sucked their eyes on Antonio? Do that shit again. Your shit will get fucked up. That's how they'll think about me. And then many people overall will be like, you know what? Let me house you. Let me feed you. Let me clothe you. Let me give you something to drink. I love that you bless people. You take care of people. Let us bless you, take care of you. So that's the kind of life I get to live. Let me drive you around. I don't want you on no trains, no loop, no Lyft, no Uber, no bus. Motherfuckers are fucking crazy out here. Motherfuckers are assholes. There's a bunch of asswipes around this world. Nah, man. Let me be your chauffeur. Anywhere you need to go, if that means we gotta catch flights together, we'll do that. Personally, I don't like helicopters. I only did it one time, and it was scary. I was like, oh my god, I can't see out the fucking glass. And I was like, oh hell no, I ain't doing this shit. So I remember, like, look, I'll just stick with planes if I gotta fly somewhere. I'm not getting in no helicopter. Anybody that's like, Antonio, come on. No, if I can't see out the glass, if I can't easily peer through to make sure that I'm safe in the air, no, we're not doing a helicopter. I don't care if that's your only mode of travel. We will drive a car, or we will buy plane tickets. No helicopter. That's my only travel restriction. That's my only transportation restriction. No helicopters. We can do, like, you can drive me, you can fly me, but no helicopters. And I also tell and I also say that many people will make sure I'm good. Many people help me financially make sure I'm good, because when you really do right by people, people want to protect you financially and in every area of life they want to protect you. So that's the kind of person I am. And I've recognized that the kind of life I live, I have that effect on people. You know. And another thing, many people say, as a teenager, weren't you a victim of statutory rape, Antonio? Yeah, I was. Most people in male bodies will not share that publicly. The ones that happen to them, not most of them will share it publicly. Because society stereotypes males as these unfeeling brutes who always annihilate the ladies, which is a shitty concept of maleness and masculinity. I think about how, yeah, that happened to me. And I talk about it because I know what it's like for women to rape me at that time. Between the ages of 14 and 17, it happened. I remember after the age of after my time of organized crime ended, after I stopped living with my mother's brother, from between the ages of 7 to 13, I was never raped between those ages. No unlawful sexual contact with an adult in me ever. Never. Never at that time. From my memory, I can honestly say that. At 14, though, when I got to high school, that's when it started happening. I was the kind of kid that adults would spend private time with, and some of those adults used it to their villainous advantage, felonious advantage. And I hate that it's considered a rites of passage in terms of being a dude. There's no calling that being a stud either. That's why, like, a lot of guys will say I was 10 with an 18-year-old. I was 11, 19-year-old. I was 12 with a 20-year-old. I was 13, 21-year-old. No, that's not sex. That's rape. But a lot of them live in denial because, like, but I want it. No, it's not about what you want it. It was the adult's job to not overpower you. It was the adult's job not to circumvent you. It was the adult's job not to be a vampirous monster towards you. It was the adult's job not to be devilishly demonic towards you. So the law is more important than what you falsely sensed that you wanted as a child. You're a minor. But what happened to you is not minor. All abuse is major. So, Yeah, I do remember some of the women. Most of them were black women who were church members. And the reason why I talk about the race, gender, and church, because in our community, there's a lot of people who have endured what I have endured. And most of the people from my black community that were men were victimized by black women, some of them in the church. Most black women in the church do not make those in black male bodies like myself go through that. Most black women in church are law-abiding, sweet-hearted, decent people. There's a handful that have raped us. And most of them, some had tattoos and some didn't. Some had piercings and some didn't. Some were short-haired, some were long-haired. Some were medium-haired. Some had wigs, some had weaves. Some were tall. Most were average height, 5'4", 5'5", 5'6", 5'3", 5'2". And a handful were short, 5'1", shorter than that. And I just remember around that time, they told me why they had a pedophilic attraction to me. It was my extensive vernacular, my high-powered brain, my soothing voice, my athletic build. I was never a super muscular person, but I look like I've been to the gym before. And they liked my caramel complexion. I was their version of tall, dark, and handsome, even though I was slightly over 5 feet as a ninth grader. And upward, 10, 11, 12 grade. And I was raped in their apartments. Most had their own houses. I would take the train sometimes. I would just be out and about, you know, not too far from home, of course. Take buses, trains, what have you. But I was lured into their homes. And I remember, some were mothers, some were single mothers. Most single mothers are law-abiding, decent people, by the way. Apartments and homes are not bad. Most are not. Theirs worse because of their being pedophiles, statutory rapists. I remember that they were the kind of people, monsters, I can't even call them people, that some were single, some were married, some were married mothers, some were just married but no children, some were single without children, some were divorced. And some were widowed. some broke up with their significant others, unmarried life partners. Actually, all races of women raped around that time, but most of the rapes came from Black women who were congregation members of churches, of Black churches, who had ministry roles in churches, and the ones that didn't have ministry roles in churches. I was introduced to some of their kids, but they were like, oh, this is, you know, the way they introduced me was like, oh, I'm mentoring, I'm tutoring him. And at the time, I'll go along with it because I was so used to being raped as a child at 5 that when it came to anything involving any kind of sexual contact, I didn't know how to say no. I didn't know how to resist. I didn't know how to run away. I didn't know how to call the police. I didn't know how to stand up for myself the way a therapist would say. I didn't know. So I stood up for myself the best way I could, was to play along, get along, to move along. I didn't know sexual boundaries. I didn't know much about sex and the law. All I knew, I knew that adults and children should never happen, but I didn't fully know what I know now. I never was a pervert. Never happened, never will be. I never was a degenerate. Never happened, never will be. I never been a deviant. Never happened, never will be. I have never pursued anybody underage. Never have, never will. I've never been with anyone underage. Never have, and never will. So I'm proof that just because I was raped as an underage person, I didn't do that to anybody else. I had the psychological fortitude to never do that, and I will maintain that forever. I always have maintained that, and I always will maintain that. Now, forevermore. In the past, I felt that way. In the present, I feel that way. In the future, I feel that way. On my deathbed, I feel that way. So that's what the kids would go along with it, and their way of tutoring me was pedophiling me. It was kind of like, oh, I'm his teacher, and, you know, I'm his tutor, and he comes by and I help him with his homework. Pedophilic lies. Pedophilic bullshit. So people want to know, who are the names? They had typical Black women names. Aita, Ramita, Anya, AC Wacy, you know, the type of names. The type of names that would make a racist go, I don't want to hire you for my job because you have stereotypical Black woman names. They had all those kind of names. What about the names of the white women, Asian women, the name, you know, the all the other types of women? They all had stereotypical white women names, stereotypical Asian women names, stereotypical Native American women names, stereotypical Middle Eastern women names. All those names you could think of that you could just roll on top of your head, they had those type of names. And that's what I know for certain. And I feel like, you know, at that time I was and then when I at the time I just felt lost. I was speechless. I didn't know what to do, what to think, what to say, what to feel. So, yeah, that happened to me around that time. And also, they knew I was on the autism spectrum. And that was the number one reason why they found me, quote unquote, attractive. Ew. Ugh.